Welcome to our newest adventure for first responder wellness. No one fights alone. In-depth conversations about mental health and culture in the first responder space. We're joined by your co-hosts, Austin Pedersen and Brad Shepard.
My friend.
Dude, I'm exhausted.
You had a late night. Exhausted.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that I get the 2 o'clock in the morning phone calls, but last night was definitely one of them.
You know, for the listeners, just to give an idea, so Austin got a 2 a.m. phone call, a little bit of an emergency, doing what he needs to do to take care of clients. But when you were telling me this story this morning, it took me back to some call out days of being, you know, as my agency, we were on call 24/7, and specifically you were designated as an on-call responder through periods of the night. And man, I don't know how many times in my life I've gotten that phone call, because what resonated with me was you were coffeeing up to try to be alert, and then you go back home and try to go to bed. You're like wide-eyed, buzzing around, nothing. Mine won't shut down.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yeah. It's lucky we have like the spot over here, this extra office space that I can kind of go up to. Actually this studio is what I slept in last night, just because it's all blacked out and it's got everything, you know, but being in a different spot and, you know, you're a full cup of a big old jug of coffee on the way up to make sure I was alive and ready to go. And dude, I had some crazy, it's like, you know, when you have a lot of coffee and then you are so tired, you go to bed, you have almost like fever dreams, kind of like they're very intense, weird dreams. That's what
mine
I
was always racing
night.
Or falling.
Mine's my work. It's like work crisis. Like, so even last week when we did those two early mornings in a row and I had to sleep up here again, I had like fever dreams that Ben was standing over me, watching me sleep. And he's like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" Like I was doing something wrong.
Did he have anything in his hand? This morning, a knife or a.
No. Just a judgmental look. That's worse than a knife.
Maybe an ice cream cone. Did he have an ice cream cone? He was just.
And then this morning it was actually, I had a dream that I was working for the old facility that I used to work for 7 years ago still. So it was like very weird. So yeah, but it's always like a restless, you wake up and you're like, I don't think that happened.
No, I think if I remember right, I think the falling dreams are about loss of control. I don't remember. I had somebody tell me this a lot. Therapist tell me a lot. I think the falling dreams are, I don't remember. It's been quite a while. I don't have those near like what I used to when I was in the pretty intense in the shit. I would have the falling dreams and then a lot of like fast moving. I'd either be in a car, I'd be running and it crazy fast moving dream.
Yeah. I've never delved into the meaning behind dreams, because I don't even think I want to know what the meaning
is. I was told you should, generically, not every dream, all the dreams, it's more the totality of it, but I was told to reflect on the theme of the dream. What is the generic theme of your dream? You know, fear, loss of control, hurt, pain, you know, what's the theme of, and I don't know, I'm not a dream analyst. Yeah. It was a therapist that I was talking to about it. So I don't know if maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing. I don't know. I have no idea. But
well, I think I have like a protective thing around my dreams, because if I have a bad dream, I can't remember it 15 minutes after I wake up.
Yeah.
But I know I know I had a bad dream, whatever the dream is, nightmare. But I can remember good dreams, but bad dreams 15 minutes after I wake up. I'm like, what was I dreaming about again?
Yeah, for sure. Or you might remember it a day or two later. Yeah. Something like that. Yep. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, so my question to all that is, does Ben know that he's in your dreams? Because I feel like I want to tell him that.
No, I don't think I told him.
Or let me reframe that.
I should.
Can I tell him that you're dreaming about him? Can I reframe it that way?
Yes. Yes. I like that a lot better. Yeah. We won't tell him the extent that it was like a judgmental standing over me. We'll let him
can't
use
give
his
him
own
any power, man.
Mm-hmm. I'm in for it. Let's do it.
Well, hey, we've both had a couple big weeks recently. I know you had an event in Colorado, and then I had part of the team here with me in Oklahoma at a national conference. National Sheriff's Association annual conference was here in Oklahoma. What was your Colorado trip?
So it was the opening of a building called the Center in Fort Collins. So we've had first responder trauma counselors / first responder trauma services on the podcast before, on the board of their nonprofit, which is First Responder Trauma Services. And the nonprofit just opened up the first of its like in the country, which is basically a 24/7 crisis center for its members. So I think they have 30 odd agencies that they're contracted with now for mental health services. Their mental health services are, you know, obviously therapy. They offer some other cool stuff at a discounted equine ketamine treatment, some other stuff like that. But this was the grand opening of the center, which is, I mean, dude, it is a beautiful property. It's on a couple acres of land in Windsor, I think. I don't know Colorado towns well enough. Google Maps is my partner there, but it's out kind of in the countryside a little bit. Like, it's not far from the city, but far enough away where it's kind of alone, right next to some farmland. And I mean, it is so sweet. They got it at a great price because of the mission. Somebody basically said this is what this property was meant for, so kind of made it within their budget. But I mean, it's so cool. It's a hangout center, to where if somebody's going through something, man, they can drop in at any time. And it's a safe place and, you know, supportive. And the real cool thing about it is it's really the first one that's 24/7 like this. There's one in Boise. I think it's called ERHC, Emergency Response Health Center. But they're not like a 24-hour place. They do like a 9-to-5, but it's first responder specific, which is also great. I'm not bashing on them at all, but this is the first of its kind. And so Danny and I went, actually, and I think there was 50 or so people there, some chiefs, fire, EMS, police. Really cool. One of the speakers there was actually a former Chateau alum that really spoke on what the services did for him. And so that was awesome to see him. It had been exactly a year since we had seen him. Big surprise for both of us. I didn't know he was speaking. Danny didn't know he was speaking. And then I spoke a little bit about some stuff, which I wasn't prepared for, of course, but, It was a really cool thing. It's been years in the making for this. And I remember in 2020 when he started talking about this, and it was a pipe dream. And I'm like, this will never happen. Like, there's just too much money to get something like he was thinking. But he did it. He found it. He got it done. And it.
Man, I love that for him. So just for the listeners' sake, what specifically are their services that they offer? What do they do?
So they're not an EAP, but that is the closest thing to them, right? Like, that's the best way I have to explain what they do. It's run by two former first responders, and then a majority of the therapists that they have are either retired or active first responders as well. They offer a bunch of different therapy sessions, whether it's EMDR, accelerated resolution therapy, brain spotting, She's creating her own modality right now, which is a cross between brain spotting and ART, which she's trying to get sent up the chain to get it certified. They do family therapy. And then through their services, they've connected with a bunch of local resources that allow you to get different types of services at a discounted rate. So that's like the float tanks, that's equine therapy, ketamine treatment, if that's something that they recommend for you. And they are an on-call 24/7 service that can run lights and sirens legally to your house or wherever you are if there's a suicidal ideation, a crisis, you know, something going on. And they usually travel with a licensed therapist and a nurse, so they can do IV bags, they can do a bunch of stuff. And it's all in this, you know, fleet. Well, the fleet's only about three vehicles, but they have everything on stock for you. And so that's included in, you know, the services they offer with the department, which is about 30 different departments all over Northern Colorado. So it's the first of it's like, I think that there had been originally some criticism of kind of some boundary stuff there where someone can run lights and sirens to your house, which I understand. But at the same time, the amount of lives that they've saved by doing that far overreaches any criticism now. And they've been doing it long enough where I think that that's kind of dropped off and people don't feel that way anymore because they've seen the impact of what they've been able to do. And, you know, like those crises never happen at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They're 2 a.m., you know, and they've never... They've never slept through one. It's two former first responders that are really involved in the mission. And it's just them two, really. Like, they have a team of therapists, but those crisis calls, it's them. They're ones.
And that's really putting your money where your mouth is, where your passion is. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is a little, the center, which I think will help avoid some of those, you know, calls that they have to go on, because it's really like that person who is on the border but knows that they want to live can come there and just be safe. And there's no judgment. There's no, you know, nobody else has to know. There's a ton of ways to make it so that it's very private. The way they have it set up with a couple different entrances and other different things, nobody will ever have to know that you're there. There's different parking. There's different kind of everything. So they really thought about it and made it a safe place. And so when we were talking up there, like, I wasn't talking on behalf of Chateau. I was talking on behalf of being a board member. You know, the real thing that's going to make this successful is if people use it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Word of mouth goes around that at 2 a.m. I was having a crisis and felt like taking my own life, and I went to this place and they were there for me and, you know, gave me a bottle, you know, fed me, gave me a bottle of water and just sat and talked with me and, you know, worked with me and didn't take me to the hospital, you know, kind of a thing. Like, obviously they have to, if there's a huge plan and, you know, for your safety, right? Like, they are bound by ethical codes to make sure that someone's safe. But if someone's just feeling a certain way and having that ideation, you know, it's a judgment-free zone.
You know, I really don't have, not really knowing the totality other than what you've told me, which sounds very impressive, you know, really no opinion on one way or the other or outside of the fact of safety being first and foremost on how they execute their duties, if they're in emergency vehicles or non-emergency vehicles, you know, no real opinion. But I do find it interesting that so many people do have opinions on it, because I think what I immediately am drawn to, because I've done a lot of interventions, and mm-hmm. when you're in that moment of recognizing that this person is actually considering or even made a decision even to take their own life, man, the whole everything about that environment changes, and it's more in your mind. It's more, you know, how I'm receiving that. And, you know, in that moment, I think I find it interesting that people talk about, or maybe even dare say judge, the execution of that, when the reality is we're talking about a life, we're talking about saving lives. And, you know, nobody really, nobody really thinks much of it if you save the life. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. I think it's minimized a little bit. The impact oftentimes is minimized if you save the life, but if they actually complete the suicide, then the questions are, what could we have done? What could we have, maybe me or somebody else, what could or should we have done to actually intervene on that part? And those are really tough questions. And the reality is these people are doing it.
Yeah. I want to be clear. I don't think, just to add in there in case I didn't make it, you know, very evident, the people whose lives they're saving are not the ones that are upset.
Yeah.
It's these other outside organizations that are like, well, that's a, you know, boundary that's crossed or something like that. And, you know, the people whose lives they've saved, which I do get to see some of the background stuff and paperwork and all that stuff.
No, I think it's good that you clarified it. I don't know that it was necessary. I think you know, you and I are talking about it, and I'm sure our listeners were probably picking up on it, because there's a lot of armchair quarterbacking that goes on in anything first responder, Bill. There's always the armchair people. Yep. But when you're talking about, you know, running code to any type of event, you start to draw attention and negative pub, and you know it's a fragile line you walk there. If when I remember, you reach down there and you turn that light switch on, you better have a good reason. You be able to justify it, and you know, it becomes second nature or even tertiary to a lot of your other duties as with experience, but the gravity of it is still very big, very large, you know. So I applaud them. I mean, they're actually doing the work. They're actually doing something to intervene. And like I said early on, they're kind of putting their money where their passion is, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, I don't know. It's nice to be involved with groups of people that are making a difference in different ways. You know, I this is so different from anything else that's really out there. Well,
they've been around the block for a while. They've been doing this for a bit, right? Years.
Yes. Yeah. I think they started, well, here's the interesting, I think, don't quote me on this, I think they started in 2016 with just the two of them. And I think they had like one or two contracts, you know, because it was just, they weren't really expecting to jump the way that they did. So I think they started in 2016 and it was just the two of them. And it was obviously a lot less scale. And then, you know, as it's been, you know, 8 or 9 years, obviously.
I know the first time I heard that they were doing that kind of work was somewhere around 2018 or 19, that I heard what they were doing. And even when I heard it the first time, I'm like, wow, that's a different approach. That's a very, you know, aggressive. I don't know if that's the right word, but that's you're being bold and I'm going to make a difference. And it was really impressive. That was not a negative thought of mine. It was just, wow, that's out there. That's, you're going after it pretty hard, which applaud them for, you know, if you're sitting on the sidelines in this game, in the suicide game, man, I would encourage you to get off the sidelines. And I would also encourage you to be careful who you critique, because this is a hard game. This literally is life and death game.
Yeah. And I think actually it shows too, they're one of the biggest, organizations that it's very evident that once you normalize something, it becomes just what it is, right? Like it's no longer, I haven't heard someone say or talk about that being, you know, an extreme response in years now. Yeah. I mean, it's been 3 or 4 years since I've heard that feedback from people. So they're one of those where it's like, we normalized this process and how to save first responders' lives. And now it's just kind of expected that that's going to be the way that it goes. So I think that's cool right there. Right. Right. Like that's a huge evidence piece of like, let's normalize this process. And then everyone just kind of thinks this is the way we do.
Well, I applaud them. I think it sounded like your trip went really well. I'm glad you and Danny were out there to be a part of that. I think it's a noble endeavor, what they're doing. Well needed, necessary. Maybe the sad part is how necessary it is, but I mean, that's the reality of where we live and what we do, you know.
The No One Fights Alone podcast is excited to announce the launch of our new merchandise line. Now you can show your support for our mission by purchasing one of our hats, shirts, or hoodies. Our merchandise not only represents our brand and message, but also supports a great cause. A portion of all proceeds will go towards helping individuals and families affected by mental health. Wearing our merchandise not only spreads awareness for our podcast, but also serves as a reminder that no one has to fight alone. Join us in showing your support and spreading the message of hope and community by purchasing one of our No One Fights Alone items today from our website, nofapodcast.com, nofapodcast.com.
Well, I do have one point before we leave that. I want for you to describe this picture you sent me of Danny and that big old smile. Tell the listeners about that picture.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We had Danny's first ride along. So, I couldn't believe it. I thought he had done multiple, as like most of us have, you know, me, that are non-first responders, me, Ben, some other people in our organization. And so when he told me he didn't, I'm like, we're going for it. And and we were lucky enough to have a contact over there for Collins that let us kind of ride along for a second. And I think it was a cool experience for him. Just the big dog gets to see kind of what a run looks like and experience kind of the adrenaline and everything. And yeah, that picture, I was actually like, I'm taking a picture and sending it to your wife, which is why he had that big goofy grin. But then I just sent it to everybody.
Oh, it was a great picture. He definitely looked like he was having a good time.
Yeah. I think it was good for him to, I think he kind of, he understands everything, but you don't really understand it. I mean, we'll never understand completely the process, but it does help enlighten on what goes on and, you know, conversations you can have with people and experience what they go through and be in their shoes for a minute.
Absolutely. No, I love it. I love the picture was him in a fire engine. I don't know what truck they were actually in, but you know, sitting in the back seat, had the headset on, rocking the big firefighter role there for a little bit, just temporarily. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. Yeah, yep. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, I was at the National Sheriff's Association annual conference, and it was really really pretty interesting. It was awesome. Met some neat people. I got to see a lot of old friends, a lot of people that hadn't seen in a long time because it was in Oklahoma, but also some people nationally that, you know, make the conferences and are in that sheriff's lane of traffic. And it was really good to see a lot of them doing well. They're just, you know, they were doing well. Specifically, one of the guys that I'd talked to a couple of years, I hadn't seen him around in a while. He's now a captain. He's promoted with his agency. He's a captain. He was telling me a lot of his pretty heart-wrenching journey that he'd been on last couple of years. I had talked to him a couple of years ago and kind of lost track of him. He'd gotten, man, it's just, you know, it's so nice to hear people doing well when they're not doing well. you know, and he was catching me up. It was just really a great conversation of drinking and getting sober and, you know, dealing with kind of some trauma and getting healthy. And, you know, he was talking about his kids doing well. Now it offers him the, affords him the opportunity to have some really great conversations with his kids that he wasn't having just a few years ago. And it was really had, that was the, that was a very, very lengthy in-depth conversation. But as a whole, National Sheriff's Association, conference was a success. Took Max, out with me and Sarah, they were in and had a nice booth, set up, had some, oddly, we were the only, I think we were one of three that I counted. We were only one of three mental health, entities at this conference.
Yeah.
It was, the vendors were, it was enormous. Wow. I'm not even sure. I would say maybe 400 vendors. I don't know. Three or four.
But why do you think you were the only mental health ones there? Cause that's not normal now. I mean, I think a few years ago for that's probably pretty normal, but everything we've gone to, even the ones that aren't purely mental health based, they've had a few providers more than that. At least
well, there. One was, local, to which I won't say its name, but the other one was our Peer Connect friends, the First Responder Mental Health folks, the, Canadian based, entity, Kevin Kucha and his group, Peer Connect. And, I think theirs was even a last minute booth. I don't know that I have the answer to that question. I found it a little bit odd as well, because the culture itself is changing enough that I would have expected a couple other facilities to be there, a couple other mental health entities to be there. Well, now that I say that, the VA had a suicide, their suicide assistance program had a booth there as well. There was another additional one. So that was a VA, the local VA here in Oklahoma, sent out a booth for, they have the National Suicide Intervention Program that they have. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think there could be a couple reasons for it. You know, I felt like Oklahoma is a great place, but I'm from there. But, you know, people don't, when Oklahoma hits the board, nobody says, oh yeah, I'd love to go spend some time in Oklahoma. It's usually San Diego or Jacksonville or, you know, Baltimore, you know, those are the
Vegas.
But yeah, it's
so do I.
That, right? I think, you know, it could be some of it. I think it was a tad pricey. And I think, you know, that culture, that sheriff's culture is exceptionally machismo. You know, I think they wear it, you know, I'm a badass. It's pretty prevalent in, and they are, I'm not saying they're not, I'm just saying this is pick you up by your bootstraps kind of culture. A lot of great sheriff's deputies, but even in my experience in working in law enforcement, you know, there's categorically there, it can be reduced down to four groups, deputies, police officers, state troopers or agents, and then federal, agents. And, you know, each one of them have their own kind of, you know, big picture personalities. Yeah. And then within it's their own, subcultures of, you know, whatever, but, you know, deputies, the sheriff industry is political. So it's an elected position. Those are the, that's makes it again, a little bit unique to the law enforcement, community as elected official. I know, police officers, or police chiefs, I'm sorry, are oftentimes appointed, state agencies work for the governors. There's such a buffer there that there's not the political nature. So I don't know. I think that's a long-winded answer to say, I really don't know why, but I'd be curious to know. I think, but we had some great conversations there with some people. I didn't see as many clinicians or peer support wellness people, but it's, you know, it was a broader conference. But great, man, had some just really great conversations. As always, I love being around people. I love being involved in those, just getting in the weeds. Met an old commander of mine. I saw him. He's an appointed U.S. Marshal, the Marshal for one of the districts here in Oklahoma. It was so great to see him. I hadn't seen him in a long time. But yeah, had a good time. It's exhausting as always. I mean, just you put a lot of time, effort, and energy in those kind of events. So it was good, you know. I don't want to get off of here before we actually hit on a point. And I think this is a good opportunity to segue because I just brought up the elected piece. Man, I don't know about you, but I've had a lot of people converse about the, you know, we're just coming off the heels of the debate. And I don't want to call it? Right. I don't want to go down a political road. I mean, each person out there, that's the wonderful nature of democracy is you can have your opinion. You can vote it any way you want. But the reality is, this is a stressful time. It happens every 4 years. And they play on your, anxiousness. They play on your, nervousness, and they play on your, attention to draw you into the drama of whatever situation. And I've had a lot of people, specifically friends and family, talk about, you know, this additional worry and concern and anxiety and anxiousness. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't at least talk about it a little bit on the podcast about, you know, what are some tools and resources and mindset things that can keep you healthy during this time, because it's a heavy year. I mean, this is, no matter what side you're on or which pick you're going to check the box on, doesn't matter. That matters less than actually what are you doing to make sure that you're staying healthy and clear-headed and clear embodiment of health with you personally, right? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I just want to say I'm more excited to see them face off on the golf course than anything else at this point.
Did you see that? Yeah. Did you see that John Daly comment? Did I send that to you?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. John Daly, there's Bryson DeChambeau said he'll play it on his YouTube channel. Yeah, that was wild to me. If we want to make light of the situation, because it is a very serious situation, that was
hilarious. That was a good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but no. Overall, like this is the time when, you know, the tensions rise, and it can be in your own family if there's different political beliefs. It can be at your workplace. It could be your environment, your neighborhood, your city, your state, all of those kind of things. And I do think it's extremely important to vote and to be a part of that process. But ultimately, I've seen a lot of people's mental health fail on both sides due to the stress of their political beliefs, whether it's, you know, Democratic, Republican, somewhere in the middle. Those are the things that you've got to take care of yourself first, right? So, you know, get out of that inward mindset kind of process, feeling of like, you know, they're my enemy or they're in my way. If someone thinks politically different than you, and make sure you take care of yourself and you stay healthy during this process. Whatever that takes, right? If that's, you know, exercise or family time or, you know, anything that you're doing to take care of yourself, remember to be there. Because it does, you know, the next 4 years does impact a lot of people's profession. It does impact, you know, taxes and finances and all of those things. And you got to remember that you can control it to a point, right? And so, take care of yourself. That's the biggest thing.
I agree wholeheartedly. I want to say, I think we need educated voters. I think it's one thing to be in tune and knowledgeable about what you're actually going to check your box on, but it's quite another to be so ingrained in it that, you know, you can't sleep at night, or you're worrying about it all day, or you know, at the slightest inkling of some type of a trigger, you just explode into, you know, a frenzy of, you know, whatever, you know, those things and many others that would lead you to, hey, I need to dial back. I need to dial back the information flow and the negativity, because that's what media plays on, is the sensationalization of negative publicity. And they want to get you stirred up. They want to get you, you know, wrapped around the axles of something negative. Doesn't matter which side it is, it's irrelevant, you know, they want to get you wrapped up. So I think, you know, I don't watch the news. In part I do, but that's at my choosing and in my, level, and my, amount. I don't turn the news on. Matter of fact, I was watching somebody else had turned the news on, and the comment they made when they turned the news, I was there at their house. They turned the news on. They said, you know, this is just so negative. Like, I know.
Yeah.
And really most cops, even if you find a cop that watches the news, a retired cop that watches the news, much at all, it's, you found something. Most retirees do not watch the news.
Yeah, or if they do watch it, they watch it obsessively.
There's no middle ground, like there's right? There's not a balance there. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think there's grounding is very important in this time of election year. So I think it's really important to stay grounded and stay healthy and be mindful of what you're actually allowing in to your brain and body, and make sure that, you know, if you have to tap into some of the media stuff, then make sure you're tapping into something positive as well, or you're grounding in some way to make sure you're getting rid of it.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the biggest thing, is just remember, no matter what channel you watch, it's going to be, you can hear two different facts about the same thing on two different channels from two different people. So, you know, take the time and stay educated, create, you know, your ideals based off of what you believe in, go with that, but don't let it control you.
Absolutely. And you know, the reality is, here we are standing, we're actually recording this on July 3. So July 4 is our, national holiday that celebrates, independence, but it actually celebrates much more than that. It celebrates us as a nation. And I think oftentimes we lose the fact that we're all, you know, here in a great country, and there's so many entities trying to tear us apart. I think this is a good reminder that, you know, don't be afraid to love the guy next to you. Don't be afraid to love your neighbor. Don't be afraid to offer some grace to some people driving down the road instead of a finger, maybe a wave. And, you know, just a little bit of just those opportunities, you know, to humanize the person next to you, that they're human. They have life challenges just like you do. And I think July 4th, I love this holiday because it's just an absolute great opportunity to say, you know, we live in a great place.
Yeah. One of the best. Every single time I've left this country for whatever travel, I can't wait to get back. The amenity, like everything that we have, we do have some downsides, but of course, like every single time I can't wait to get back because I love it.
Well, we'll release this after the 4th of July. You'll obviously hear us well past the holiday, but I think on behalf of Austin and I would just bid everyone a very safe and joyous 4th of July holiday. You have a lot to celebrate and be thankful for. So just a little reminder from the No One Fights Alone team here. Austin and I, we love you.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.